Jason, we friends just having a conversation.
Wave your hands, hands high.
Don't stop.
Wave your hands, hands high.
All right, welcome back to another episode of North Texas Music Fanatics. I'm Jason Janik. I appreciate y'all tuning in. We're, episode 14 now, not counting the mini episode. By the way, tell me what you think about the mini episode. I may do more of those just to give y'all some fun stuff, because there's so much North Texas music to talk about. I've got to imagine this show could go for decades before we get to it all. Besides that, I appreciate everyone who's been following us on Instagram. I'm going to try to put up more content there. Right now, it's mostly just pictures of our wonderful guests and some pretty cool little snippets and blurbs that they said. Other than that, don't forget to find us on Patreon. Patreon is cool because it keeps this thing going. You know, I know it's a pretty small little podcast. There's about 100 of you that listen each week, but that kind of makes it cool. It makes it fun. It makes it like our own little secret thing. And I know y'all tune in because you love North Texas music, and this is where you're going to hear a lot of those stories that otherwise would be lost to time. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you to the dozen or so people who have done Patreon so far. I know I mentioned before that we have a couple people who signed up on the higher level. Thank you so much to Beth and John. Their episodes were great to listen to, and it was really sweet of them to sign up on Patreon. That was awesome. But anyways, why don't we kick into this? And I think you're going to have a lot of fun with this one. This guy has so many stories. We could probably do 3 episodes worth. He's been in the scene for quite a while, and I'm excited for this one. So let's introduce Eric L. Martin.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for having me, Jason. This is really cool.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So I think, I know you've been in a lot of different stuff, but I think most people, if we say one band name, it's going to be immediate, and that's Hi-Fi Drowning.
Yeah.
Let's discuss that.
Yeah. Hi-Fi was really, speaking of North Texas music, Hi-Fi was kind of my first foray into Deep Ellum and the music scene, really outside of church. Jason, I know you and I started discussing before we started recording here just how many musicians have started in church. I know Tim DeLauder started with church. That was a huge influence in his life. His granddad was a Church of Christ pastor.
And Todd Vaden from Toadies.
Yeah.
And I mean, so many, not only just North Texas, but there's been, you know, other bands that I've listened to their stories, and so many of them had either dads who were preachers or they started in the choir. I just find that interesting. Why do you think that is? Like,
you know, what's funny is that I literally just brought this up with my dad this past week, because riding around with another friend who's an excellent musician. He's never had a band. I'll give him a little props. Joe Farkas, incredible songwriter, incredible voice. And he's just been sending me demos from his phone, which that's a whole nother topic we can get onto with the ease of how you can do demos these days. But, you know, so I started asking him, well, how did he start? And there you go again, church. And I think from Whitney Houston to, you know, whatever, Todd Vaden Lewis from the Toadies, in what my dad and I were talking about, I don't know that you really have the access that you have as a kid to do musical endeavors in front of people, and maybe more importantly, with other people. Learn how to harmonize, how to keep a beat, how to sing with other people, how to play with other people. And I grew up in a very musical home. I grew up watching my parents sing and harmonize together, and music was always played that had a ton of harmonies in the house. So it's just a great school to learn the craft from. It tends to be in church, unless you're in choir in school or something.
No, that's a great point, because, I mean, like you said, you've got choir in school, and, you know, only so many kids are going to do that. And you've got your church choir, or you've got a family who, instead of watching TV, they sit down and play instruments together.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's not like as a kid, you're going to go down to Deep Ellum. You know, you've got to start somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm. The first time I ever played in Deep Ellum was 1995. And it was Hi-Fi Drowning's first show, and it was open mic night on a freezing cold Sunday night at Club Dada in 1995.
That's crazy that you say that, because I know I was listening to the Dallas Famous podcast that Andrew does.
Yeah, and, that's a good one.
Tim's episode, he mentioned that Tripping Daisy's first show, I think, was Open Mic at Dada.
I think so. I listened to that episode last week, and I want to say that that's what he said. I remember him talking about his grandpa being a pastor.
Oh, yeah.
I already knew that. But, yeah, I'm so glad that place still exists, and I grow fearful when I hear of things like Lola's closing, and I think it was Twilight out there closed as well.
Oh, yeah, Twilight Fort Worth did, yep.
I mean, to me, Dada and Trees especially are kind of royalty for Dallas as far as music venues go. When you look at...
Well, and Curtain Club and then Clearview, mm-hmm. you had this little kind of mm-hmm. network. And even if you had in places like Galaxy Club back then,
during
my Harder Beat days, we did a monthly showcase for like alternative style bands. You know, several of these bands were just like at the beginning, up and coming. They had mm-hmm. just recorded something. Those kind of showcases or like you said, open mics, they gave people a real chance to get their foot in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And like speaking of Galaxy Club, I think one of the coolest shows that at the time seemed a little under the radar that Hi-Fi ever got to play was we did UFOFU's last farewell show at Galaxy Club. And then that was when Brandon started Captain Audio with
Regina
Chalou, and that's when Josh came in from Comet, just to give you an idea how incestuous the music scene is. So ultimately, here's how Hi-Fi started. I'll talk a little fast so we don't take up too much time, but there's the trail goes back through Comet, actually. So I went to school out in Mesquite in Poteet, and my Spanish teacher, she was always saying, oh, my husband has a great band, and I thought that was cute and kind of blew her off at the time. Come to find out, she was married to Jim Stone of Comet, kind of a legendary shoegaze band that signed to Dedicated, which was...
Comet was a name,
that's for sure. Yeah, and Comet was on Dedicated Records, which is, you know, a very sought-after label for shoegaze bands and was what Spiritualized was on. Yeah, lo and behold, she was married to Jim from Comet. Anyway, so that was a lot of encouragement, those relationships, for me to keep going with Hi-Fi. And then we ended up playing UFOFU's last show at Galaxy Club, and
I could
keep rambling.
Glad that you brought up UFOFU, because you're like our 14th episode, and we have yet to bring them up. Yeah. And that band to me was just pure energy, amazing. Mm-hmm. I saw them a number of times. I saw them at the Bronco Bowl show where, you know, people were throwing shoes at them and they were throwing them back. Mm-hmm. I saw them at Galaxy for their CD release party. I'm trying to think of where else, but every time I saw them, mm-hmm. you did not want it to stop.
Yeah. I remember standing side stage when we did their farewell show at Galaxy and just watching Ben on the drums, a probably 17, 16, 15-year-old Ben at the time on drums. And then what, you know, it ultimately ended up being Secret Machines, which is still one of my absolute favorite bands of all time. And it has nothing to do with them being Dallas or rubbing shoulders with those guys. That's one of my all-time favorite bands. There's not a bad move they made, not a bad song, not a bad record.
And it was different than what Dallas was doing. It mm-hmm. felt very New York.
And they moved to New York and was on Reprise within a year.
Yeah, yeah.
They moved it. They moved in a, I believe it was just like a cargo van, the three of them. They lived in a one-bedroom flat and waited tables out there in New York. And within a few shows, they were so incredible live. Boom, they were signed, and it made sense.
And, of course, Ben eventually took over drumming for Tripping Daisy, mm-hmm. Brandon. God, I'm trying to think of all the things they did because they kept busy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything eventually morphed into, so you had Captain Audio, and then when Tripping Daisy went away, it was School of Seven Bells, right?
Yeah. Ben, I don't know that Tripping Daisy at that point, well, I think, obviously, Tim and those guys would be better suited to answer this question, but I believe that when Wes passed, that was kind of the end of Tripping Daisy. And then Ben played on Jesus Hits Like the Atom Bomb for Tripping Daisy, and I think that just gave that record that same energy you were talking about with UFOFU.
Oh yeah.
And then Ben, being the amazing multi-instrumentalist and a great voice and an incredible guitar player too, linked up with, I believe they were sisters, and did School of Seven Bells. And Secret Machines put out a couple records Ben that were still fantastic.
Yep.
The self-titled record, and then I forget the other one, Phil.
Oh, yeah, Phil, yeah.
Phil, who played in Tripping Daisy, he's playing, essentially taking over Ben's role with guitar and vocals.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay, that's great.
And Brandon has now been playing keyboard in Interpol forever.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so if you've seen any live Interpol videos on YouTube, take a look at the keyboard player. That's Brandon.
That's crazy.
From Secret Machines and UFOFU, etc.
Yeah, I think when you have that level of talent, it's not hard to find something new to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be left at home alone.
Both those brothers were immensely and are immensely talented. Yes.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you've already mentioned a couple great bands that you guys got to share the stage with, and then we kind of discussed the family tree, so to speak, of where everybody's played since then. Tell me about a few of the other bands that Hi-Fi played with.
Oh, man.
I know that I saw y'all, I think, the first time at Fry Street.
Okay, yeah. And I think you got a great shot. And that meant so much to me. I posted it. Maybe I should post it again. But you shot me at Fry Street in 01, and then this past year at Trees. And I was so flattered by that, to have that shot. Over 20 years later, 21 years later, have you shoot me in both occasions. But bands that we shared, I mean, I would be amiss to not mention the great El Gato and the Damned. Still friends with all those boys. And John Vineyard from El Gato actually flew in from San Diego and did a solo show with me, which was really magical because we hadn't shared a stage since.
Was that the one at the Sundown?
Yeah, that was at Sundown at the Granada Theater. And yeah, we hadn't shared a stage since 04.
Sure.
Long, long time. But we've remained easy friends all these years, and we may not talk. It's one of those friends you may not talk for a couple of months, and it's just a quick text about whatever, a band, a song you're working on, and it's like you talked yesterday. And the Danes. The Danes are, I'm telling you, the Danes are the best band that many people have not heard of from Dallas. Brandon Carr is the main songwriter of that thing, and he's doing this wild psychedelic cowboy thing that he did it in front of, where he opened for me at Sundown, and then he did Tripping Daisy. I want to say he did not Tripping Daisy. I want to say he did the Polyphonic Spree's Christmas.
Okay, yeah, that could be. They bring on a lot of people and just really make that.
I know
into
he did something at the Kessler with Spree, and so I would think that it had to be the Christmas thing. Yeah, John's gone on and has another band. John Vineyard from El Gato has another band called The Oxen, based out of San Diego, which is very good as well.
Does it have the same kind of El Gato feel? Or what's
because John's a made songwriter, so it's got that kind of quirky, natural, heartfelt, genuine feel to it. Kind of a little Flaming Lipsy, gentle, tug at the heartstrings, kind of psych. Yeah, I love John's songwriting. It's very true and heartfelt.
Well, I knew this would happen because you've got just a wealth of history in you. And as usual, when we've got somebody as wonderful as you, we've blown past the time that we normally have our first song. So let's just take a pause here. Let's pick something to play. And, I mean, we barely even touched on Hi-Fi. So when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Let's start with, what would you think about starting with some UFOFU?
That'd be great. That'd be very cool.
All right, so then let's play this. In a chair in a room, in a sea of the sound, in a sea in a room, in a chair in a room. The chair, the room, the sea, the sound, neither me nor the you, or the chasing around. So we jump out a window and land on the ground. The sea, the room, the chair.
Thinking that the weather's nice, I can come to your house, we can fool around.
Man, I just cannot get enough of UFOFU. I know that we discussed where some of the guys are. I know that, so Joe eventually went on and he played with Pleasant Grove. And I'm trying to think of what else he did. He does a lot of woodworking and stuff now. I'm not sure if he's even, he's got to be playing. He played something recently. Was it with the Spree? I'm trying to think.
Wait, who?
Joe Butcher.
Oh.
Sorry, I was sure. Talking about UFOFU and I...
Yeah, I'm not sure what Joe Butcher's doing.
I saw him recently, too. He was at the I Love You band premiere. Are you familiar with Steve's new project?
I'm not. I think I've seen something come down through social media on it.
Yeah, you got to check them out. It's some great stuff, and it's very reminiscent of what 90s Deep Ellum was doing, but a modern twist on
it. Very cool.
But anyways, let's talk more about hi-fi. So I remember seeing the name all the time on the venues down there in the 90s. It was a name that people knew. You guys must have been playing a lot.
We were playing a whole lot. Just how much it works, especially back in the 90s, with just relationships and people. Man, we were so young and hungry and naive. We were those kids that would hang out. We weren't old enough to get in the venues, but we would hang out before and after shows and give bands cassette tapes of our demos that we were doing. I mean, and they were sound quality. They were horrible looking back, you know. I happen to love the way cassettes sound, but I mean, it's analog. But yeah, we'd make these. We had these 4-song cassette demos that we were bold enough to give to bands that were guys that were almost 10 years older than us and gals and ask, hey, can we play with you? Can we get on a show with you? My buddy Matt, who now owns Good Friend, which go visit Good Friend if you're in the East Dallas area, fantastic food. He was kind of higher up at Trees at the time back in 97. We were playing, you know, the crap nights that you play when you're a young band. We were playing on Tuesday and Wednesday nights when no one's in Deep Ellum. And we happened to draw a lot of people. We asked everyone we knew. I mean, a couple of us were in high school, I think, and then two of us were in college. And so we just invited everyone we knew, and we drew well. And Matt got us on a weekend show at Trees opening for a touring band. And it was just kind of off to the races after that. And we were playing in front of some really great bands and fan bases, and then quickly garnered our own. It was really kind of a fast deal.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, because like I said, all of a sudden the name was just there and it was everywhere. Well, besides Deep Ellum, where all did you play? Did you do much touring?
Not a ton, but I think more importantly was the bands that we got to play with. And looking back at some of the cool shows, I mean, we talked about the UFOFU show, getting to play in front of 16 Deluxe and Luna at the old Deep Ellum Live. That was an amazing show.
That was a great venue, too.
Yeah, it was a great venue. That was a lot of fun playing that venue. 16 Deluxe, that's another. You brought up other bands that were influential. 16 Deluxe was huge for us. They were on Warner Brothers. Chris Frenchie Smith is really the mastermind behind that band and just an amazing engineer and producer. And he's got a studio down in Austin called The Bubble. He's just an amazing engineer. He did a lot of work on Rounds the Rosa, the last Hi-Fi Drowning record.
How many albums do you have? I know I've got one up here on the wall somewhere. I might have two.
Yeah, we technically did three. The first one, we kind of keep hush-hush. it just isn't real representative of who we are. I mean, we were so, so, so young. It's a self-titled one. You might find it in a UCD store somewhere. And the second one, Narcy Darvish, was recorded by Keith Cleversley, who did all the Flaming Lips stuff up to Clouds Taste Metallic. And he did the spirit. It did the first worked on the first three Spiritualized records, Mercury Rev, The Posies, The Verve, Hum. So that was probably the biggest eye-opening recording experience, was getting to work with Keith. I could go on about that.
You can go on about anything you want to. This is open-ended. This is two friends talking.
Well, cool.
So what else is worth talking about hi-fi? I mean, you're going to know the stories better than I will.
Right. Well, let's let's stop on the Keith thing. That was really, you know, I didn't think there was any chance in the world we'd get to record with Keith Cleversley, but we sent him demos, very rough demos. Demos that I was thinking, this is pie in the sky to think that this guy would work with us. But he liked the stuff, and so we spent weeks up there in Chicago recording with him and living at his studio. It was absolutely a masterclass in recording, and he's very unconventional about the way he does things. He's a real stickler for analog. The way his studio is set up in Chicago, it's a brownstone, so it's three stories, and you got the big drum rooms on the first floor with the high ceilings. The second floor is like the great room with all the pedals and amps and vocal booths, and then the third floor is a live-in apartment. And so just to be able to live there and wake up and record and have nothing to do but focus on that record with a great engineer like Keith, was, it really changed our lives as to how we look at recording and making music.
Yeah, that's got to streamline things for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, like most of the bands from the 90s, hi-fi, they kind of drift off.
Yeah.
And
what happened there?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we were going into the middle of the aughts. We were all kind of a disaster. I was probably the biggest disaster, as young people that get a little deal and are doing the thing. I mean, we were playing in Ellen before we were really 20. I think only one of us was 21 when we really started even playing there. And we got into all kinds of stereotypical pitfalls that a musician can fall into, especially naive ones like us. And so we never had a official farewell show. So there's been talk over the years of doing a reunion show, but you know, the brothers in the band, John and Jeremy Eggert, they live out in Oregon. Taylor is super busy with the Taylor Young Band and the O's, and then I've got the new project, The Memory Shivers, that should be firing back up in the spring. I would think that a hi-fi reunion show is not at all out of the question. It's just the logistics and how much it would cost to get the brothers here, and of course their wives and their kids would love to see them play. So to get everybody flown out here to Dallas, get some rehearsals in, and do the show is kind of a monumental undertaking. Not so much for Taylor and I, being that we live in Dallas and don't have kids, but especially for the Eggert brothers.
Yeah, that makes sense. But that would be a pretty massive thing for people who remember, you know, 90s and early 2000s era Deep Ellum. So tell me, where do you go after that then? Hi-Fi's done. You've had a number of projects. I've seen you, whether you're, you know, working with someone else or have your own thing.
Yeah. So I had, you know, the new project's called The Memory Shivers, but I had formed another project kind of in the middle between Hi-Fi and The Memory Shivers called The Heart Eyes Open. And it was originally intended to be a soundtrack to a movie with the director, Frederick Wolcott, who's just amazing. And it was a really ambitious idea. The game plan was for me to write an hour of uninterrupted music and then the movie to be made to the music to then be projected above the band. So I did my part. The music is done, and no hard feelings, but Frederick got deals from multiple movie studios to work on big movies that paid well. And
and sometimes projects then get pushed to the side.
He needed to do that, and this was going to be a labor of love for him. And so it never really got off the ground visually, but musically it's something that all of us are very proud of. And so we just started playing it out and got some great reviews and had a blast doing it. And I had a myriad of different musicians play with me on that one. Even Sean Russell played a live show with me. He's the founder and lead singer songwriter for the Cutthroat Finches. Known him forever. Yeah, the great Patrick P. Cakes Allen played drums. He's just a bombastic hitter. Janice Amunda played keys and vocals, and she also actually played with the Memory Shivers as well for a while before she moved to Arizona. But that was a real shoegazy one piece of music. It was to pull it off, I mean, we didn't have one break within a song. It was one holistic piece of music.
Yeah, I think something like that sounds like that would be a blast as well. Mm-hmm. I know I've got the Tripping Daisy what's that one called? Oh, off the top of our heads, if I remember correctly, where it's just one long song in different segments.
Almost stream of conscious.
Jam out. Yeah, stuff like that can be great, especially on like a rainy day, and you just lower the lights and play it, and it just it just goes. Yeah.
This is 13 songs that timed in at just a hair over an hour.
Okay.
But I had to write preludes and attachments to make one song flow into the next song. Yeah. So it is one whole thing, but it is 13 pieces of 13 individual songs that end up being one piece of music.
Sure.
I'd love to play that out again if we can get everybody back in Dallas.
Yeah, that would be great. Is that something that's available out there otherwise?
It's not. It hasn't been recorded in a form that we can put it out. Because, again, in order for us to really have a recording of it, we'd have to run it to tape on a live show. We'd want to do it as one whole piece, which, again, it takes a lot of rehearsals, and you don't get time to towel off between a song or even get a drink of water. It's once it clicks off, it's go for an hour.
So that would be
it's
crazy.
A lot of fun, but it's ambitious, but it's a blast.
I imagine so. Well, let's do this. We're right about time for another song. So it makes sense maybe to hear some hi-fi at this point. You want to play some hi-fi?
Sure.
Let's play this. That was some classic stuff right there for sure. Let's talk about the recent stuff you've been doing. Memory Shivers, you mentioned earlier, and that's your current band.
Yeah. The Memory Shivers is really a moniker for a grouping of songs that I write that I feel like has that sound. I don't know how else to explain that. I mean, as a songwriter, I'm always writing, but I'll get done or I'm halfway through a song and I can already tell it's not a Memory Shivers song, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. I was talking with Rhett and he was like, I've got old 97 songs and then I've got stuff that I know is not old 97 songs.
Yeah.
You know, somebody as prolific as you and as talented as you are, you know that you've got certain stuff that fits over here, certain stuff that fits over here. It's like the John Dufalo effect, like is what I call it. It doesn't make sense to have it be a solo thing. It makes sense to be a Memory Shivers thing or vice versa.
Yeah, I'll tell you, another person like that that I draw huge influence from is Bradford Cox from Deer Hunter.
Okay.
And he has a solo project, and instead of just calling it the Bradford Cox Band, the whole name in your band is just...
Oh, I'd love to discuss the philosophy of band names. We discussed in the recent episode with Ashley Lear about how some of her band names came about. This is always a fascinating topic to me. Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to call my solo stuff the Eric Martin Band. Sure. Is what it comes down
to. Well, so, and like you and I had discussed how you like to add in that L because there's already a musician, Eric Martin, anyways.
Yes, yes, that's an embarrassing one. So I keep the L in on my name because there was some would say kind of a silly band out of the 80s called Mr. Big, and the singer for that band is Eric Martin. So, well, like with stuff that I write for the Memory Shivers, it's the whole idea behind the Shivers is going, it's going to be more of a real white light, super loud, surfy, psych, overwhelming shoegaze kind of experience. But then there's some songs that have a little more of an intimate feel. That doesn't mean that Shiver songs can't have that, but I just wind up left with a lot of songs that I feel like they don't have a home, because I don't feel like they're Memory Shiver songs, but I think they're very worthy songs to be heard, at least in my little opinion.
Sure.
I'm doing those right now as solo stuff as just Eric L. Martin, but I don't even like that. So I might have to give that a name too. I don't know.
So just off the top of your head, we're not going to hold it to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you had to come up with a name right now for your side project, what sounds good?
Okay, that's really funny because just last night I was discussing with my buddy Joe names for a side project. I think this one is really funny, but Side Hug.
No, oh, there you go.
You know that that workplace hug that you get, especially as a male, that you give the female coworker, that very cautious side hug?
Yes, of course.
Yes, very important.
No, it's nice. There's a little bit of a depth to that name when you think about it that
it's
way.
It's like a triple
entendre. Cautiousness, yeah. Yeah,
it's a double entendre of three meanings. It'd be my side project. You get to use hug in a band name. I mean, how often does hug end up in a band name?
Yeah, right? There you go.
So Side Hug or Side Hustle.
I like Side Hug a lot better than Side Hustle. Yeah, everyone's got a side hustle, but who's got a side hug?
Who's got a side hug? Right, right. So we're respectful of women. We finagled hug into the name, so maybe Side Hug is going to be it. Maybe we'll
keep an eye out for that. For see if hug. That band's.
Thank you for weeding out Side Hustle. I think that one was needed to get weeded out.
It's interesting trying to pick a band name. I am horrible at playing. I can kind of bang out some chords, and I'm so sloppy at anything even close to lead. So I'd never actually have a band. But I always thought if I was ever going to have a band, I'd either call it Gaucho or Honcho. And I don't know why. It just sounds like a good band name to me.
That makes me think of Groucho Marx.
Oh, Groucho, yeah.
Groucho Marx.
I think so. I came up with Honcho because I saw it on the side of a car once, and I was like, that is just different.
That worked. I love band names. I have a dear friend.
Who came up with Hi-Fi?
I did, after watching a PBS special on a oceanographer that drowned.
Oh,
because
wow. Yeah.
The irony that this man drowned because he wasn't a good swimmer, yet he knew everything there was to know about the ocean as an oceanographer. I just thought that irony was interesting.
Oh, no, I love that.
So they called it the Hi-Fi Drowning.
I could probably do a whole episode just on where did that name come from. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like Steely Dan, to find out where that came from. That's a wonderful story. Well, I don't know about wonderful. It's about a dildo, but... interesting story.
One of my longest and best friends, he came up, he has one of the all-time greatest band names ever when he moved to Korea, and wait for it, okay, brace yourself. It is Unrequited Love and the Restraining Order.
Oh, wow. I even just love it for the length of it.
I mean.
A nice long band name is great.
I will want to go see that band without hearing one note if that's the name of the band.
Yeah.
So, and the idea was the songs were all going to have a thematic theme to it. Like the album was going to be called Love Songs from 500 Feet and Tapping on Your Window at 2 a.m. and songs like Baby I Can Change and all that.
Well, so memory shivers, I mean, mm-hmm. You came up with that name mm-hmm. as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, when people ask me about memory shivers, my response to them is, well, don't you have them?
Yeah, I know that, yeah, of course.
You know? And typically they look up for a second and take 2 seconds, they go, okay, yeah. You know, unless you're a weirdo and just have zero regret in your life at all, I want to know you and I want to figure out how to do that. But yeah, I think we all have some things we'd want to change in our lives. Again, if you don't, I would love to have coffee with you and you'd be my life coach. But I think we all have that. It's just that when it's late at night and you're trying to fall asleep and you're like, oh my gosh, that happened, that kind of thing. So yeah, that's where the name came up for that. But yeah, with this cold snap lately and the shivers being on a break right now, and I've been riding my tail off, and so there's plenty of new memory shiver songs. We'd love to get back and record again somewhat soon.
Well, I know I saw y'all play for the Deep Ellum 100 mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
How'd you get involved in that?
Man, that was such an honor to get chosen for that. So for those that don't know, the Deep Ellum 100 did a thing for the 150th anniversary of Deep Ellum this year, and they gave grants to only 10 artists out of thousands that were submitted for the grant. So only 10 got it. The Memory Shivers were one of them. They released a vinyl as a kind of time capsule, and the Shivers were lucky enough to have the first track on there, Darkland Desires. And I believe that our main contact there was through Scott Tucker, who
Scott helped really make that thing happen.
Scott is we talked about the greatness of Brandy Beakley before we went on the air here, and she is greatness. But so is Scott Tucker. Scott Tucker does so much unfun behind the scenes work, championing other bands and other music other than his own. And he's a great musician in his own right, has a great band in Aztec Milk Temple. But he is so about the scene. He is so about helping other people. And Gianna from Deep Ellum 100, same thing. I mean, she just invests her blood, sweat, tears, and money into the Dallas music scene and championing Deep Ellum. And I still am just blown away and so frustrated with how this city does not champion Deep Ellum enough. It is the crown jewel of our city with so much history. And we still associate Chicago, Kansas City, and New Orleans as the great jazz towns. But I mean, we had Blind Lemon Jefferson walking up the train tracks in the early 1900s.
We could get into just an entire discussion about that. And I mean, I don't attend those city meetings to know what they're thinking. But I can only imagine, you know, from an office in City Hall, you're looking and you're like, well, Austin is the music capital.
Austin's great, and everyone knows that Austin's a music, live music.
We can be music too. We've got it.
But my gosh, we were a hub for these traveling jazz musicians back in the late 1800s, for crying out loud. And there's so much history here, and it really frustrates me that when you bring up Deep Ellum to Dallasites that were born and lived here, that many times what they'll bring up is something like, oh, well, didn't someone get shot down there? It drives me absolutely batty.
Yeah, but they bring that up about the state fair, too.
Yeah.
I mean, people in Dallas.
Well, they don't bring up that people get carjacked and killed at North Park Mall, too.
Yeah.
So, come on.
It's tough because, like you mentioned, the city doesn't view Dallas as a music hub. A lot of people are nervous about the stuff they hear with the crime and the grittiness, which, I mean, a lot of that has been kind of whitewashed away. And then you've got people like us who spent decades down there and understand it and love it and hope that it goes on for another, 150 years.
Yeah, it's the crown jewel of our city. It really is. Like I just mentioned before, there was a couple of terrible carjackings at North Park, but, the same people that say, oh, I'm staying away from Deep Ellum because there was, this, that, or the other happened, they'll go to North Park Mall because it just doesn't have the rep. And typically, and it's so cyclical when it comes to that stuff in Deep Ellum. We went through it in the early, or the mid-aughts when Trees closed for a while and the Entertainment and Collaborative. That's a whole other podcast with the Entertainment Collaborative and the lawsuit and the da-da-da-da, and there's a lot of stuff there. You know, the city did put a lot of money into the streets and the sidewalks, and it looks great. It's a little glossy for my taste. I like my deep elm gritty and dirty, but it needed it. It needed it.
It needed some of it, in my opinion. Yeah. Some of it was worth it.
There's a great t-shirt going around that says, "Keep your uptown out of my deep elm." And I want to find that t-shirt.
Well, no knock against uptown. I've seen a lot of fun in uptown too, but you're right. It's the two are different places.
Just the whole homogenized SimCity computerized neighborhood thing. Let's not knock everything down that has some history to it and build something shiny and new.
Well, so do you still find yourself, when you're going out, do you go out and just watch shows? Or are you like me, where I've got it ingrained in me, I'm a photographer, I shoot music. It's hard to sit there without a camera. When I go to a show, I go to a show to shoot. Do you go to a show just to listen?
I go to a show as a fan, and I also go to a show and I study. Everything from little nuances on how a vocalist uses their microphone, you know, how they come off a mic and how they eat when they eat the mic, how a guitar player uses his pedal board, how a band communicates with each other on stage, what they're using maybe with lights and visual stuff. I go to just study the whole experience, but I go to also feel free and liberated and let other human beings shoot some sound waves at me and feel joy and happiness and life and just be a fan.
Who's shot joy into you recently? I love some of the people that I've seen over the last year, and anything that Nick Earl is in, I love watching him play.
Who is that?
So Nick does guitar now in Tripping Daisy. He's filled in for what Wes did. He does stuff in the Polyphonic Spree. But yeah, Nick is in a lot of projects, and he just does some great stuff. You definitely have to check out his various ventures, because that dude can just play.
I will. I know Dylan Silvers is still playing with Polyphonic. Yep. Dylan's a long time friend. Speaking of other bands that kind of go back with hi-fi, Daryl would definitely be one of them. I just adore Dylan Silvers' stage presence and voice. He's electric to me. That man makes me so happy. I wish there were more Daryl shows, for sure.
Yeah, I always love seeing them. I think I saw them quite a few times at Clearview, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Clearview was Hi-Fi's regular stop, too. It was Clearview and Trees and Gypsy were kind of our favorite spots to play in Dallas. As far as you'd ask about what other artists are kind of giving me that energy up right now, I am just obsessed right now with Jessica Dobson. She has a band called Deep Sea Diver, and she's a songwriter and a phenomenal guitar player. Really creative is how she goes about it. But she's played with Beck. Who else?
You could stop right there, I'd be impressed.
I know. And the Shins.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, good grief, right? I mean,
that's got to look great on a resume.
Oh my, yeah, you can do anything you want. I mean, Beck could get anybody he wants, obviously. And then, Nick Zinner's in the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, who's one of my favorite guitar players on the planet right now. And that she's played with them is huge. And then the Shins. So, but check out Deep Sea Diver. Just their KEXP is phenomenal. And you'll become a fan of hers immediately. Goth Babe is fantastic. I don't know if you've heard them.
I have not, no.
They're fantastic. They sound nothing like their like the name. It's really just one guy that travels up and down the West Coast in an RV and records music. That's fantastic. And Atlas Sound, we kind of touched on this earlier. That is Bradford Cox from Deer Hunter. That's his solo project. And when he plays live, it's literally just him. And he runs loops, vocal loops, guitar loops, which I do a lot of that live when I do solo stuff.
And that can be really fun. Well, you mentioned, you know, the shoegaze style, and that's very popular in shoegaze.
So when I do solo stuff, it's the same deal. It's I'll run drum loops, guitar loops, even vocal loops all at the same time, kind of spin a bunch of different plates at the same time. until they all inevitably fall down.
Yeah.
In the middle of the song. But that can be kind of fun too. I gain a lot of influence from Bradford. Bradford's done at least 3 Atlas Sound records. And again, it's just all him. And so inspiring. So
I can imagine. So I think the first time I saw somebody use a pedal to loop and build mm-hmm. like that was at Rubber Gloves. I think it was Mono, if I remember correctly. It just, like you said, it's inspiring.
Yeah.
Just to see somebody take one instrument and a pedal and just build and uh-huh. build and build.
Yeah, I actually use it in guitar lessons too, because it's a strict ruler as yeah. to your phrasing. And if you get it wrong at all, you can hear it's off. So it's a teacher. It'll teach you to be right on in your phrasing.
That's smart.
When you track something over it. We first saw a very instrumental band, and I forget their name. They played with Hi-Fi Drowning at Trees. And they were a lot like Explosions in the Sky
sure.
from Austin, were real loud shoegazy, but no vocals. And the guy was doing a ton of looping. He was using this very older version. It was an Akai looper. And our guitar player, Jeremy Eggert, who's brilliant, he latched onto that, and he got one of those loopers. Everezzo, that building, I'm playing as well, but there is a building lick at the beginning of that song. And that is a loop that Jeremy's building on the fly and clicks back in whenever that comes back to that lick throughout the song. But it was always, you asked about live shows, it was always very tricky live, because Jeremy would start that song with that loop, but whatever he started that loop at, that's now the tempo of the song.
Yeah.
So Taylor would have to latch onto it. So if he was feeling a little too wound up and started that loop really fast, which he did a few times, all of a sudden, the BPM for that song, we knew at the intro, you know, hold on to your butts. This is going to be at about 155 BPM, and just try to get through it. So,
well, I got to say, this has been a blast, and I know we've got probably 30 million more things to discuss. So why don't we go ahead and wrap it up here? Hopefully, we didn't miss out on too much fun. But
this has been so cool. Thank you, Jason.
I got to imagine there's... Like I said, there's 30 million more things we could talk about.
We could go and go and go.
But yeah, let's go ahead and wind it down. We'll pick a song to play. We talked about your current band, Memory Shivers. We talked about a lot of different bands. What Texas band do you think we should close out on?
Let's either go with Frenchie's band, 16 Deluxe.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
Or Light Bright Highway. Do you remember that band out of Denton?
It sounds familiar.
Oh my gosh. That was another instrumental band. It was like one song, and it would just one huge crescendo and build to a volume that would peel skin off your skull. It was I saw them open for Tripping Daisy at Deep Elm Live one time. They were amazing. So 16 Deluxe, Light Bright Highway, or... Lift to Experience.
Oh, Lift to Experience. That's a good one. I know that I've got that.
Hi-Fi Play. That's another band I should have mentioned earlier. I think I've got that right here.
Let me see.
Go on and on and on. I've got some Lift to Experience on my phone if you don't
okay.
have any.
Okay, perfect.
This huge music catalog you have in this room. It's amazing.
Yeah, you should see. So
vinyl and CDs.
It's a lot harder to get it on vinyl, but I do have quite a decent amount of Texas artists on vinyl. And then CDs that... aren't even on vinyl,
yeah.
that aren't even available. Some of them not available on iTunes.
Yeah.
It's so amazing to me to think that some of this stuff people can't experience if they don't have it there in front of them.
Yeah, I know.
And we were talking the last episode with G.I. Sanders of South FM. He's got that label where he's re-releasing some of this stuff that would have been disappeared into the ether otherwise. And so it's good to know that people have a chance again to hear some of this stuff, because there's so much good music in North Texas.
There's more than people even know. There really is. Yeah, and as we've been sitting here, we didn't even talk about Lifted Experience. I mean, that band blew everybody's mind. Josh and them, we did multiple shows with them, and we just jaws on the floor whenever they
play there.
Live.
There were bands like that, Lift Experience, Bedhead. There were so many
Bedhead.
Bands that reached so many people, but still kind of fly under the radar. Mm-hmm. And it's just, It's a
good one.
So much fun to talk about all these. Well, I mean, we could end on some Bedhead. That's, you know, that's Chris Wheat.
Yeah.
And I mean, that right there is
Bedhead, Lift, 16 Deluxe.
Yeah.
But if we keep it Dallas, that would be more Bedhead.
I wish we had a million more hours.
Let's do it again. This has been
definitely,
a blast.
Definitely. Yeah. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Like I said, go to Instagram. Join the fun there. NTXMF. Go to Patreon. That really helps us. These shows premiere on deepelumradio.com on Tuesdays and Fridays. And then that following Monday, it's available to stream through Amazon Music. So again, thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you,
everyone,
Jason,
who's listening. And let's enjoy this song. I can't force myself to